Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome on in. It's a Thursday edition of the show. We have Pedro Gomez joining us today. Pedro has he's been in Cuba and was very, very emotional on the air at ESPN the other day about what he saw in Cuba. Of course, that is the homeland for Pedro Gomez. We want to talk to Pedro about that. Things going on around Major League Baseball and the passing of Joe Garagiola Sr. That'll be with Pedro Gomez. That comes up here in about 15 minutes. We'll also have Kevin Harlan with us today. It sounds like Kevin has been battling the weather in the Midwest trying to get to his destination. Turner Sports, NCAA, NBA, play-by-play, and CBS Westwood One. He is going to be doing the game in Chicago with Iowa State and top seed Virginia. But I also want to talk to him about the Gonzaga-Syracuse. Gonzaga-Syracuse, now that we're back into March Madness tonight, like, I'd like to see Oregon give Duke a game, and I think that they're going to. I really do. We felt good about Oregon, other than some of their boneheaded decisions in the Pac-12 tournament. But with March Madness back at it tonight, that's the one game that that I'm looking at. And there's, I mean, when you get to this point, these eight games, all interesting storylines. Gonzaga-Syracuse, because nobody wanted Syracuse to be in the tournament. And Gonzaga's one of those stories that Gonzaga has made the March Madness tournament 18 straight years in a row. 18. And you think about when Don Munson was there and then Mark Few there, and that they went through all sorts of changes on their roster this year. Gonzaga had to win their conference tournament just to get in. And once again, here is Gonzaga doing something with nothing. They're in Spokane. Like, they're in the middle of nowhere. They could have played in Spokane. Could have gone there, and they didn't. They got shipped out. Syracuse, I'm just not a big Q's guy. That's not my deal. I've just never been a big fan of Syracuse. I don't know if it's whiny Jim Boeheim. I don't know. Of course, the Syracuse guys will say he's the greatest coach in the history of the earth. I'm just not. And some of the guys that come out of there go on to the NBA, like Carmelo, and I just kind of roll my eyes when I hear them whine and cry, and it feels like guys that have been babied all through the years. So I want Gonzaga to win. That's my bottom line. If you're a football fan today, Carson Wentz is working out, the quarterback at North Dakota State. Today is workout day for Carson Wentz. Are we going to learn anything by the workout? No, it's just another piece of hype machine leading up to the NFL draft. On the Diamondbacks end of things, they play the Padres today, and we're going to start there with baseball. Eric and I were out shooting our Baseball AZ show yesterday. We were over at Talking Stick. We wanted to jump in and hear from Chip Hale. And there were some of the national guys there yesterday, Bob Nightingale from USA Today and Tracy Ringlesby, a very good national writer. And the Diamondbacks media crew was great. Spent some time talking to Luis Gonzalez before we went in and just how spring's going and so on and so forth. It's been a good spring for the Diamondbacks. Their record has been great. The story, though, was Eric, as we're walking in, Eric said, hey, the flags are at half staff. What's going on there? And I said, well, it's got to be Brussels. So we go about our business, and we're shooting down on the field, and the public address announcer, right before the national anthem, says we would ask you to rise for a moment of silence. The baseball world and the Arizona Diamondbacks lost a true legend today when Joe Garagiola Sr. passed. And as he was saying passed, the entire stadium gasped. And it was packed yesterday, and it was packed with Giants fans as much as Diamondback fans. And it hit me between the solar plexus pretty hard for a number of reasons. Joe is somebody that I was a travel buddy with back in 2000. Jerry Colangelo had asked me to do some games. And when Tom Brenneman was with Fox, and he said, Jerry called me one night. I was on the air in a break. And he said, look, you've seen this team from the beginning. You know what this team is all about. I know that you love doing play-by-play. I'd like for you to fill in. We'll move Greg up to the TV side. We'll have you do the radio side. Go be yourself. Go have some fun with it. And go enjoy yourself. Go be Brad. So they did the same thing with Bob Brenly. Bob Brenly was traveling with Tom Brenneman and doing big Fox games. So they asked Joe Garagiola Sr., to be on the TV side and to fill in. So Joe and I were travel partners for that year. We'd meet at the airport on Thursdays, typically, to fly on in for a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, wherever it was that we were going to be. Our first game that we ever did was in Texas, and I knew I was in for an adventure when we got off the airplane in Texas, and Joe had a conversation with a cab driver. And I knew Joe. I'd done interviews with Joe, and who didn't love Joe Garagiola Sr.? But the conversation with the cab driver was anything but what's the weather like, because the cab driver recognized Joe. And so the stories were already flying. When we got back from that weekend to return home, we were at DFW and we're walking through the airport and somebody recognized Joe, and Joe graciously signed an autograph. He carried these cards around with him to make it easier. They just hand the cards off and sign the cards. And while he was getting mobbed, because then a lot of people recognize that's Joe Garagiola Sr. Or just Joe Garagiola or Joe G., Joe stops and he looks across and there's a guy in like orange dolphin shorts and he's got a tank top on, kind of a loose fitting tank top, and he's got wild hair everywhere. And Joe looks over and cranes his neck up and says, "Richard, hey," and it was Richard Simmons. And so Joe went over to Richard and the two of them, here's Joe Garagiola Sr. and Richard Simmons in an airport. Couldn't be two more polar opposites, you wouldn't think, but somewhere along the way in life, they'd cross paths, and there was a mutual admiration society and all that. And I'm thinking we're going to miss our flight over this. And he had a great conversation, and more people were wanting his autograph. It was like the Beatles. We were in a cab once in Colorado, and the cabbie got lost, and Joe got a little irritated and gave the cabbie directions on how to get from that airport in Denver. I think it had just opened, which was in the middle of nowhere. But he was somebody that in traveling with him, we would have conversations about family. When I went a different career path from what the radio station went to, KTAR back in the day had a change in ownership. They let most of us go. Joe had his email was AWEFOX, short for Awesome Fox. And on Christmas morning, 2002, at like 7 a.m., there's an email from Awesome Fox, and it was, "I'm sure your head is spinning. It's Christmas Day. Love your family. Embrace your family. You're going to be just fine." And it was words of encouragement. And obviously, he didn't have to do that. And he and I, through the years, would spend a lot of time talking baseball and doing shows. We did a show once out of Tex Earnhardt's facility. Tex had just opened a place in Apache Junction. And Joe Black, the former Brooklyn Dodger pitcher, great man, and Joe and myself did a show out at Texas dealership. And Joe Black was talking about being Jackie Robinson's roommate. And the dealership was just packed full of baseball fans. And they were young and they were old. They were dads explaining to their kids, "That's Joe Garagiola and that's Joe Black." And obviously there was a lot of, "That's Joe Garagiola and the guy that he's with, let me fill you in on who he was." And Joe Black is talking about how Jackie would sleep, they'd get off the bus and the white players were pointed to this hotel and the black players were pointed to that hotel. And how Joe Black would spend a shift sitting, picking roaches off of Jackie while Jackie slept. And Jackie would take a shift picking roaches off of Joe while Joe slept. And there was a time where Joe we had a commercial break. So Joe goes to the restroom. In the restroom, somebody says to Joe, while Joe's standing there doing his business, "Hey, Joe, how's it going? What's going on? How you doing? What?" And Joe just straightforward, straight face says, "What does it look like I'm doing? Water skiing?" You know, taking a leak, doing his thing. And so I could go on and on and on Joe Garagiola stories. When that news came down yesterday, and Eric, you were there, did it hit you?
It did, because as you mentioned, like the PA announcer got on the mic and said, "We have lost someone very important to Major League Baseball and the Arizona Diamondbacks." And at that moment, your mind is just racing, thinking, okay, who is it?
Who, yeah.
And there was a little bit of a pause, and then he said, "Joe Garagiola," and there was, I'll never forget that gasp, that 2-second.
Yeah, it was loud.
And it was a sellout crowd yesterday, and there were just as many Giants fans as there were Diamondback fans there yesterday, and everyone was just I don't want to say in shock, but disappointed and saddened. Because he was not, I mean, he was 90, so, and he had been in poor health, so it wasn't a complete surprise. It was just not something you wanted to hear.
So Joe had a bad fall in 2010, and he'd come down to Channel 3 and done things with me often, like a lot. And he had a bad fall and he hit his head and he went underground for a bit, and I'd called and left messages just to see how he's doing. And so we had this phone conversation where I just wanted to say, hey, how you doing? How you feeling? And he said, I'm feeling better. And, you know, we should talk about this, talk about that. I said, well, what if I come over? So I went over to his house, and the photographer I took with me, who's been in the business here in the Valley for 30 plus years, he's affectionately known as Gus. And I called Gus yesterday about this. We went over to Joe's house, and Joe became very emotional, very, very, very emotional, because the fall that he had taken was the first time that I think he felt old, frail. I'm not quite sure the term to use. And we sat on his couch, and he had to collect himself a couple of times. And it was hard. It was a really hard interview. And because the emotions were flowing so freely, and you're trying to stay in the moment when that's going on and yet be sensitive to the person that you're talking to. I did a piece with Joe and Joe Garagiola Jr. where their grandson was at Phoenix Country Day High School. He was a first baseman. And my thought was, what if I could get Joe Sr. and Joe Jr. in the bleachers mic'd up watching their grandson play baseball? And Joe loved that idea. Just thought it was the greatest thing. And so we went and did the piece, and it was great. We would go down to the mission down in Bop Chul and with Sister Martha, who he referred to as Sister Quicksand, because every time she called, she needed something. She was in trouble down there doing God's work. So there was a lot more to Joe than just a guy that was on TV doing a Diamondback game. And we're going to talk to Pedro Gomez about that, plus Pedro's very emotional trip down to Cuba. That's on the other side. Kevin Harlan later in the show. Jared was out at the Suns game last night, so I wanted to get to Jared on Kobe because he was at Kobe's farewell address. We'll get to all that as the show moves on. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ. It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sismat.
Pedro Gomez just back, not even back yet. He's back in the States, I should say. From people want to use the word emotional trip. I would say seeing you on the air shedding tears, that it was a closure trip for you as part of your journey through life. Is that the best way to sum up what you saw in Cuba?
Yeah, Brad, I would say all of the above. I think that a lot of times people think that because tears are being shed that it's somehow sad or an unhappy time, and it was quite the opposite for me. It was just, I was just overcome. I was just overcome, but by no means was it sad. I was more happy to have accomplished my both my brother and my father's one of their final wishes. So it just meant a lot to me to be able to spread their ashes in Cuba.
And for those that didn't know, you took their ashes, and where did you spread them?
I spread them right in the bay, right in the Atlantic Ocean off of the coast of Havana. I was on land, so to speak. It was right at the water's edge.
Mm-hmm.
It's the edge of the water in Havana is not a beach. It's more rocky. It's completely rocky, actually. The beach is 60, 70 miles to the east of there. So it was just, like you said, closure. There was definitely emotion involved, but
sure.
I was very, very happy to have done that for them.
Were you prepared for the moment?
I thought I was.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly thought I was. I don't know that you can ever truly prepare for the emotions that sometimes come cascading out, and that I guess there is no there's no way to prepare for that. That's just something that is a human element, I think. And that's what happened there, Brad. I was fine. And then all of a sudden I wasn't. And I think it's human nature.
Okay, this is not to sound insensitive about the game taking place, but I just have to wonder what I saw on television, okay, versus what reality is like in Cuba. Because what I saw on television was everything is great, okay? Do you know where I'm going with this?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and so is everything great and hunky-dory in Cuba? I would think the answer is not really, but how much of what we saw on television, because it was great. I told Eric, I said, I was watching you and your staff of not your staff, your ESPN staff of dozens that they sent, which was appropriate. This was a landmark historic event, yet part of me is saying, how much of this is really true that it's a great place to be today, or how much of it is just people are still living in fear and living in poverty and tyranny?
Yeah, I mean, things are not good by any means. It's quite the opposite, probably, of what was apparent mm-hmm. on television. There's a lot of struggle. There's without a doubt, there's a lot of struggle. And that's, you know, part of the communist manifesto almost in a capitalistic world that, you know, that system truly does not work, but it is the system that is in Cuba. I'm shocked and surprised at how good natured the people are though. It's almost like, look, this is our life and we just either have to accept it and try to make the best of it, or we have to basically, you know, I don't know, go out and kill ourselves. I mean that not in a literal sense, but mm-hmm. You know, there's two paths you can take. And for the most part, the Cuban people have accepted and they're just hoping for change at some point. They're certainly hopeful and they're optimistic. And I think the fact that President Obama was down there, and I think the fact that there is now dialogue for the first time in over half a century leads them to believe that that they should be at least somewhat optimistic. But to say things have changed would be completely inaccurate. Nothing has really changed yet. You know, they receive stipends basically every month. This is how much bread you can have. This is how much milk you can have. This is how much meat you can have. And it's not very much. It's not very much. And so people have to, you know, basically go out and hustle to make ends meet. And I don't mean hustle in necessarily a negative way, because there really is no crime. That's the one thing communism does have, is that there's no crime. And that's because there's so much fear mm-hmm. of retribution from the government. So it is almost Old Testament mentality. You know, you steal a water bottle from someone, hey, you could go to jail for 2 or 3 years. The punishment never fits the crime. It's always very heavy-handed. So the fear definitely has put them in a different situation. And I would say also almost the brainwashing of the last nearly 60 years, the programming of the programación is a word in Spanish. I got confused there for a second. The programming of the mind, where you're just basically going to follow. And that's going to, you know, if in fact change does occur, Brad, I think that's going to be one of the more difficult aspects where people start to think for themselves again. And like we saw in Eastern Europe when the Soviet Union collapsed, I think crime will also probably be an issue if in fact Cuba does open up again.
Talking with Pedro Gomez, you're so humble, you would probably say no to this next question, but are you recognized on the streets in Cuba?
I was actually surprised that, there was. It wasn't massive. It wasn't anything like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they get – listen, they don't have ESPN down there. What they get is there's these weekly thumbnails, which are the I forgot what those are called now. The things you stick in a computer.
A little thumb drives, little flash drives.
A thumb drive, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so there's pirated ones of those that are sold for a few pesos, and they're basically a recap of the entire week of the sports world. Mm. And you could buy the News World or whatever, and they're very illegal down there. but because I was asking, you don't get ESPN. How do you know? And they said, no, no, we have ways. We have ways. We know. And they explained to me how they do it. And they'll stick it in a computer, and boom, there they get a week's worth. Sometimes they'll get ESPN Sports Center, and they'll get baseball games and things like that. So I was very, very surprised that a few people, not many, mm-hmm. but a few people did know who I was.
Are you a symbol of hope to those people, do you think?
I think it's all hope, and I think pride, because so many of them said, we can't tell you how much we appreciate that you always state that you're Cuban roots. We that makes us so proud to know that even though you've lived your entire life over there, meaning the United States, that you still hold on to your Cuban roots so strongly, and you mention them as often as you can, and that's definitely a point of pride for them, as it is for me, Brad.
Sure. Okay, the game itself. So I read this. I didn't see it because we were on the air, but the leadoff hitter for the Rays is of Cuban
descent. Tyrone Verona?
Of Cuban descent, correct?
Oh, no, not Cuban descent. Nope. He defected 3 years ago.
Okay,
he's full-blood, okay, full-bred Cuban.
Defected, but the crowd did not give him a ovation when he stepped into the box, even though he was the leadoff hitter. Why would that be?
That is true.
And why would that be?
Well, because of the 50,000 or so people that were in the stands, it was by invitation only.
Okay.
And they were told how to comport themselves. And there was no way for me to confirm this, but I've heard that of those 50,000, half were basically under plainclothes police.
Mm.
And the reason that half were is because they were spread throughout the stadium. And if anybody had any idea of trying to commit a protest or show a sign or run onto the field and with a sign, anything like that, remotely close to that, it was going to be smothered immediately. Because if every other person in the seats is a policeman, even though they're plain clothes, you can imagine the control that they could have over a crowd, no matter what size it is.
So they were afraid of retribution. If they cheered for this guy, that is a signal towards the government that we agree with what this person did, correct?
Yeah, the other aspect, though, Brad, and it's probably more accurate, is that because the crowd was by invitation,
mm-hmm.
you know, they may have known baseball, but they may not be the hardcore baseball fans.
Got it.
And Tyrone Verona was not a star player by any means, but he was a very good player. He played for Camagüey, which is a few hours away from Havana. So it's not like he was a superstar by any means. They may just not have recognized that he was anybody.
We're going to go from...
Certainly his teammates did on the other side.
Sure.
He had teammates who were on the Cuban national team that played with him in the Cuban league.
We're going to go from heavy to heavier. Pedro Gomez with us, ESPN Baseball Insider, on the loss of Joe Garagiola Sr. So you knew Sr. very, very well, as did I.
Yes.
When you received the news, what were your initial thoughts?
It's funny because this was my immediate action. I was obviously sad because we know Joe so well, but I was also, it was almost a celebration because I immediately texted Joe Jr. I didn't feel like a phone call on this point, on this day, was the right thing to do. So I just wanted to send Joe a message that I was thinking about him. And I texted Joe a somewhat lengthy text. I just said, hey, Joe, your thoughts are with, you know, you and your family's thoughts are with me. I just wanted you to know that instead of being sad on a day like this, this is really a day to celebrate. It's rare in life when someone gets to do exactly what they want to do in life.
Mm-hmm.
And your father certainly lived that life. And for that, he is to be commended. He was a great man. And I feel all the more luckier to have met him. And surprisingly, I did not expect a return. Joe replied to my text within a matter of minutes and said, Pedro, you're absolutely right. He never got cheated out of 1 minute of his life. Thanks for thinking of me. It was, I believe me, I did not expect a return. And that I just wanted to pass along those sentiments to Joe Jr. and, you know, who you and I know very well as well. And I just think that a lot of times when people pass along, you know, we're really down. There's also times for celebration. And I think In Joe Sr.'s case, it should be celebrated more than it should be a down type of day.
There's a couple things about when we would see Joe Sr., at least I would see him. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I always knew that he was going to have a quick quip about something. He was going to ask me about my wife or my kids, and then he was going to say, hey, so-and-so's got this spit tobacco going. I'm going to go over and say something to him. So it wasn't necessarily in any order. I remember one time I was sitting with the late Tony Gwynn, and you know Joe and Tony knew each other very, very well. And Joe and Tony had a spirited debate about why Tony couldn't stop the dip. When are you going to get that stuff out of your mouth? Ah, Joe, you know, and you know Tony, how he was, Pedro. And
yep.
That was something that many ball players would see Joe, I think, walk over to them and know that they were going to be busted. The spit tobacco thing was one of his hardcore passions, one of many, I think. But it's resonated throughout baseball.
Absolutely. There was the tobacco. There was the baseball assistant team, BAT.
Yep, BAT,
which
sure.
Took care of players that did not receive union benefits because they played before 1967. And if they were down on their luck and were in need of anything, whatever it was, whether it was a medical issue, whether it was a, hey, I don't have a roof over my head issue, it didn't matter what it was. Baseball assistance team has done wonders, and Joe is one of the founding fathers of that. Joe was very, very passionate in life. And you're right. Whenever you saw Joe, and I think a lot of times players saw Joe walk in the clubhouse, and if they were visiting players, because the home club already knew Joe, and they were like, oh, geez, here comes my, you know, he's going to get on me about chewing.
Yep.
And I think Joe didn't mind. I think Joe thought, if I can hammer away and hammer away and hammer away, and finally they're going to say, Joe, just so you'll stop talking to me, I will stop dipping. He didn't care what the reason was for you to stop dipping. If it meant him to stop harassing you, if that was the reason you stopped, Joe was happy. And it was certainly, crusade is not the right word because he was, well, maybe crusade is the right word.
It is the right word.
Yeah, Joe was on a crusade to get tobacco out of everybody's mouth, and well, he saw the horrors of it. He saw what had happened to a very good friend of his, Eddie Matthews, who lost his lower jaw because of long-term dipping and tobacco use. And you know, I think he'd be very proud today to see that some cities across the country have instituted no tobacco period in their cities, and that means ballparks. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because we know ball players have a very difficult time giving up their chewing tobacco. And in certain cities around the country right now, it's already in, and this will be the first season that they're in. How they police it is going to be interesting. But I think if he were alive, Joe Garagiola would be on the field going, hey, look, pointing at somebody going, look, he's got dip in his mouth. And where's the police?
Yep.
During the game, he would be doing that.
Stay well. Appreciate the time. Safe travels. Thanks.
Brad, thank you. Talk to you next week.
You got it. There's Pedro Gomez with us every week. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Kevin Harlan in about 6-7 minutes. We also have Jared Cohen in studio. He was at Kobe's last game last night. That's next. Jared Cohen joins us now in studio from Sports 360 AZ. He went after Kobe last night. Well, you didn't really
go
after him.
Go after him, no.
No. How was the scene last night with Kobe? You were there in his final game, sitting on the court, so to speak, baseline, right?
Well, I got to shoot it. It was cool to go to the Staples Center last night, you know, with all the Lakers fans.
L.A. West.
Earl Watson had a great line saying before the game that he was expecting a lot of Lakers fans, a lot of which had never even been to L.A., so Watson gave a little jab. But Kobe was great. The highlight of the night was the post-game press conference, though, and what he had to say about the past, the present, the future, involving his relationship and his time playing against the Suns as a member of the Lakers. Here's a few snippets from that.
It's a cool story. you got to check out greatness last night.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm a purist with most sports, but basketball especially. It's like one of my first loves in life. And I was having a discussion with a friend of mine who happens to be a Lakers fan, and we were discussing that maybe Shaq is in this category as well, but Kobe is really the first great player that we got to see from start to finish in his career. Mm-hmm. And so being there as part of his celebratory tour and being there for his final night in Phoenix, where he was a part of some of the most incredible memories, some of the worst memories, depending on what side of it you were on. It was pretty cool. And I definitely took in the whole scene as best I could.
Good stuff there. Jared Cohen last night. Thanks.
Problem.
We are back with Kevin Harlan next. Kevin is getting ready for the March Madness tonight. Top seed Virginia and Iowa State and Gonzaga and Syracuse. That's actually tomorrow, I should say. And we'll go through some March Madness stuff with Kevin Harlan from Turner Sports and CBS Westwood One. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Right, so Kevin Harlan is on a flight. He just landed. So is that Kevin Harlan, Eric's been on the phone with Kevin Harlan. Welcome back to the show, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. So Kevin's not going to make it today? Is that the...
We had him. We lost him. We had him. We lost him.
So he's on a flight, right?
The plane was late, so we pushed him back to the last segment of our show.
Yeah.
And I guess they've been sitting... The plane's on the ground, but they're just sitting there taxiing, and he can't... we could do it in 30 minutes, but
that'd be like... He'd be like, so...
No, it'd be more like...
Yeah.
Please wait until the plane is completely stopped.
Which is fine. He could say, hey, I'm on the air and with Brad. Can you get me something to drink or something? It's fine.
And you know how... I mean, I'm sure you've been seeing what the weather is like in the Midwest. So,
it's been terrible. Yeah, no, he's in Chicago.
These things happen. Sorry.
Stuff happens.
If you're tuning in for Kevin Harlan, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
We're going to try to reschedule.
It's fine. Bruce Arians said parents who let kids play football are fools. It's, you know, he talked to Peter about this. People that say, I won't let my son play football. Let me rephrase that. Parents who won't let kids play football are fools. People that say, I won't let my son play football are fools. So he defended the NFL and the sport of football. This is the greatest game in the world. I think it teaches more values than any other game that you play. Now, what's interesting about this is John Harbaugh said the same thing to Peter 2 days earlier at the owners' meetings. So it seems to me that the coaches of these teams are going to go on the offensive about their game and how great the game is. Nobody should be debating the merit of playing football. Nobody should ever say, wow, playing football is bad for you. I think it's terrific that you are working together with a guy alongside of you and all of your teammates on both sides of the football and even in special teams. You can't get a sport better than that. If you're playing basketball and there's five of you out on the court, you all have to work together. If you're in an individual sport, that's great too. But to say that football is bad is just flat wrong. Football is dangerous because of the concussion issue. That is very fair to say. And when you have people that say, oh, well, it's really not that big of a deal, like Jerry Jones, that was one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Just dumb. When you have that many guys' brains who have been looked at, checked out, and sampled, and CTE is in the brains, don't try to say that there's not an issue, because there is. And I've seen enough guys jacked up when their post-careers are over that are still on the right side of the grass trying to figure out why they can't function. But I do think it's totally naive when I'm not going to let my kid play football. You've got to let them figure it out, and there's going to be dangers in that sport. When your kids go out and they skateboard down a hill and you don't know they're skateboarding down the hill, it's pretty dang dangerous. When there's a kid that's playing baseball and he gets a line drive off his face like Archie Bradley or off the side of his head, or as we've seen, that can happen too. I believe that being involved in a sport like football in junior high at the early stages, playing flag football, If my son, I've got an 11-year-old, and he's going to be bigger than me, and he's already got football coaches at the high school level saying, when are you going to bring him over here and bring him over here to this camp and that camp? That's where it happens in fifth and sixth grade. He's never even shown an interest in football. But because he's going to be a big kid, and he's a big kid already. I've had one coach that said, that's the next Todd Heap. I don't know that. And my son looks at me and says, who's Todd Heap? Parents who won't let kids play football are fools. Will this resonate with some parents? Will this piss off some parents? I'm sure that it will. If you're a single mom and you're struggling with health insurance and you don't want to let your son play football, I get it. I get it. You're thinking, I can't afford to have him get hurt because I'm struggling just to pay for this insurance to get him out on the field. I get that. And I know those parents are out there. The mom who's a teacher in fourth grade, she's a single mom, and she has a son in high school who's a wide receiver, and he's just playing football to stay out of trouble, and he really enjoys it at a high school. And I know this kid inside and out. She's worried to death that he's going to take one big hit, but she wants him to be able to play and to take some of the attributes of the sport with him through the rest of his life. But I do think it's ironic that Arians and Harbaugh both went this route of let's start defending our game. I think Harbaugh even went to the point with Peter of saying we have to start defending our game more than we have. But how do you do that when the other side of the street is CTE is real? And you read stories of kids being laid out. We're not going to stop reporting on that. That's not going to happen. We're not going to say, oh, this great game over here, and we don't want to damage the game. We're not damaging the game. We're merely pointing out that this is a real problem. So I have no problem with Bruce Arians saying what he said. I'm sure that there's some people that are not going to be happy about it. People that say, I won't let my son play football are fools, coming from the football coach of the Arizona Cardinals. And I love Bruce in that regard. He says what he's... There's going to come a point in time because most coaches at the end of the day, the end of the career, are shown the door. I don't know if that's going to happen with Bruce or if Bruce is going to be able to show the door himself. But I love the fact that he is so open about it. And some people think it's bluster. Bluster was Buddy Ryan. Buddy was just full of bleep. At the end of the day, he was. He was just full of bleep. Bruce is not. There's some. But with any coach, there's a little bit of that at the professional level, but not much. And I rather enjoy it because, I don't know, they won. Buddy didn't win bleep when he was here. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Plenty of content up on our website, High School College Pro, Pro College High School. If you saw some of Jared's video with Kobe Bryant, you want to check out the whole thing, that's up on our website at sports360AZ.com. Our Football AZ show is tonight with Peter King and Michael Fabiano and the recruiting roundup and some news and notes around U of A and ASU spring ball. It's on Fox Sports Arizona. That'll be tonight. Thanks for being with us.